You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Good morning. Good Monday morning to you, to be exact. Good Monday morning after daylight savings time. I'm not sure who developed this, who thought this was a good idea, but I disagree with them wholeheartedly. I do not like daylight savings time. I do not like it, Sam. I am. I love it in the fall when I gain an hour. I'm just not so fond of it in the spring when we spring ahead and I lose an hour. The only good thing from my spring ahead this time was that my husband had to lecture the 4:30 Saturday Mass. So we went to 4:30 Saturday Mass, and then I was able to sleep in on Sunday morning. In fact, okay, so here's some, I have some confessions to give you from my weekend. The last time we talked was that Thursday. Mm-hmm. We are going to talk today, by the way, about a priest answers 27 questions you never thought to ask. Father Michael Kerper, and that's from Sophia Institute Press. Sarah Reinhart is usually here on the second Monday of the month, but unfortunately she had some plumbing issues that needed to be, taken care of. Like I said to her, plumbing happens. Get it? See what I did there? Plumbing happens. So hopefully we'll see her next month. So I was like, oh, I really need a book or something to talk about today. And this one just came in the mail from Sophia Institute Press, and it looked very interesting. So I just read it. Yeah, that's how fast I read. Just read it enough for us to talk about it. A priest answers 27 questions you never thought to ask. Pretty good stuff. We're going to be looking at that shortly. But first, I'm going to tell you about my weekend and some of my true confessions that I have to make. First was, well, some of the confessions or some of it's just information. Saturday, I was super blessed to go and give a morning workshop, a morning retreat. I don't know where a workshop came from. Out in Ipswich, Mass. What a beautiful, beautiful location. Those people are so blessed to live there near the ocean. And it was gorgeous. My sweet husband drove me, and he brought little Faithy with him. And the two of them braved like 12 degree weather with a wind chill below zero to go check out the ocean. Pretty funny stuff. And so we did that. We got up there, did that in the morning, and then we came home. It wasn't like we did anything taxing. I was just tired. I think, you know, sometimes the night before I have to give a big talk or any talk, because to me, anytime I'm going to bring the Lord's message to people, it's a big talk and it's an important moment. And I really fear oversleeping. I don't know. Do you do that? It's like one of my biggest fears. And it happened to me once. So here's a confession. So I was supposed to give this talk at 8:00 in the morning at a church on how to use the internet, social media to evangelize. I overslept. I woke up an hour late. It was like no way I could have gotten there. I was beside myself. Here's the good news. Nobody showed up. Yeah, isn't that great? First time I was happy. Nobody cared what I had to say. Nobody showed up. Just the deacon at the church and the DRE, and they were both really, really sweet about it. They actually did invite me back to speak another time. I thought for sure I had severed that relationship. But ever since then, I live in fear that it's going to happen again. So before I have a talk, I will sleep on the couch usually with the window. I have a big picture window, so I'll sleep on the couch with the curtains open. I will set at least 4 or 5 alarms. I will drink water before I go to bed so that I have to go pee. These are all some true stories to you. TMI Allison. Welcome to A Seeking Heart with TMI Allison. Too much information. So, you know, be having to get up for Saturday morning. I had to leave the house by 7. I think I just didn't sleep really well. So Saturday night, we're trying to find a movie to watch as a family. By the way, there's nothing good. nothing good for kids or families. We watched Trolls, and we had watched, it's kind of hard too for my daughter, like Sing is out, but that just didn't seem really appropriate for my daughter, who is profoundly deaf. I didn't think a movie about singing really would have interested her very much. So anyway, this is how tired I was. You ever like been scrolling through, like looking for something to watch, and then all of a sudden you realize you just dozed off? I did. Twice I fell asleep looking for something. My husband's like, hello, you want me to do that? Like, yeah, I should probably hand this remote control over. I fell asleep around 8:30 and I woke up. Well, I wish I'd woke up 12 hours later, but I actually woke up at 12 midnight thinking, you know, that's another awful thing, right? When you think you've slept through the whole night and you wake up and it's midnight. Anyway, my husband came down and I was still asleep. I'd fallen asleep on the couch again and it was midnight. I mean, it was 8 a.m. He's like, oh, you slept for 12 hours. I'm like, dude, I so wish I had, but I hadn't. But that was springing ahead. So I lost my hour, but at least I didn't have to get up and go anywhere and I could just be a big veg. Sometimes you just need that, right? You just need that Saturday or that Sunday where you can stay in your jammies and you don't have to go anywhere and you can just chill. I gave up television for Lent. So I was able to watch TV. I watched a NASCAR race. That was cool. Nice little fight between Joey Logano and Kyle Busch. I don't know if you watch NASCAR, but there was a fight. Go Google it. Go YouTube it. My husband just sent me a link that apparently I can go watch it again. It's like watching hockey for the fights. We say we're not going to, but we really do. I don't watch racing for the crashes either, but sometimes I do like the scuffles that make me laugh. So we're going to talk today about a priest answers 27 questions, but I have to give you my other confession. I was going to do this parenting book, and then I realized, I will get to it. It's called The Discerning Parent. It's about teens, and it looks really good. It's out from Loyola, I'm pretty sure. I think that's what the publisher was, but I just wasn't feeling the parent of the year right now. So I don't think I really want to read a book that tells me and just really shows me how really not the parent of the year I am. I've talked a lot on the show about my eating problems, my being overweight and all the allergies I have. And I just have a lot of issues around food. I know it started when I was little. I have vivid, vivid memories of my grandfather yelling at me to eat when I didn't feel good once and I was sleeping over there. My mother used to ship me off. I felt like every time I got sick, she shipped me off to my poor grandmother. And I remember being there sick with a horrible earache and I just didn't feel like eating. And my grandfather was screaming at me about, you know, how hard he works. And it was like maybe 40 years ago, and I still remember, like, there was this hamburger patty with rice and corn, which was one of my favorite meals, still is. But that day I just wasn't feeling it. And he was screaming at me to eat it. I remember having my father, same kind of thing. I don't know, maybe it's our culture. You know, we just, our Portuguese culture where the dads work so hard, the men work so hard. That's the culture growing up now. Everybody works so hard. But, you know, and you didn't waste food. You had to eat. You know, people are starving in China. Like that kind of, you know, that mentality, the finish your plate club. If you didn't, you were dishonoring your parents or your mother's good cooking or your father's hard work. And so I grew up with all these messages, and I didn't realize until this weekend really how much they affected me and how illy they affected me and how I passed those on to my children. So I made corned beef and cabbage on Thursday. Yes, I can't wait till this week. I don't even care that my diocese gave us the dispensation and we can eat meat on Friday. It was on sale. It looked good. I was ready for it. So I made myself corned beef and cabbage, and I gave a plate to Faithy and I gave a plate to me, and all the men in my family had gone out. So it was just me and her eating, and I just love it. I love it so much. And so I'm eating, and it's not cheap, you know, even on sale, it's not the cheapest thing in the world to eat. And I saw her out of the corner of my eye. I kind of saw her get up. And before I realized what she was doing, she had dumped her whole plate. She ate the potatoes and then she dumped her whole plate in the trash. And I lost it. And I don't know why I lost it. it was like ridiculous. So I'm yelling at her in sign language. You know, we don't do, all you needed to do was ask mommy first. If, you know, if I not, if before you threw it away, we could have saved it. Mommy could have eaten it. It was just ridiculous. I was losing my mind over this maybe 50 cents worth of meat. Oh, but it gets better, because not only was I losing my mind over this 50 cents, but it was right on the top of the trash. And so I took it out and I ate it. Yep, I ate out of the trash. This is what happens sometimes in my brain. And then I obsessed, because I'm germaphobe. I obsessed for like the rest of the night. Oh my gosh, I'm going to get sick. I have to speak tomorrow to these ladies. And I lost it. And I just spent the whole night just praying and asking God to heal me. Obviously, there's something that I need to address and I need to get past. And I talked to my daughter, and her and I talked it out, and I actually gave her the ability or the permission to tell me to stop, to help mommy get in control when she sees that food. Cause we had just had a fight like 2 days before over breakfast, because she's a picky eater. And I was like, no, you have to eat this, cause I'm thinking it's late and you have to go to school. And I really like, just logic goes out the window. So her and I are cool. I taught her how to tell me, stop, mommy, you're losing your mind. Like, focus, this is not important. I'm more important than this food. And then really turning to God and asking for his grace and his understanding and his blessing to help me get past, you know, it's like we have like these layers, I think, of the things in our past and in our history. And over time, the Lord just peels back the layers. So there's my true confession of eating out of the trash. We come back, we're going to look at 27 questions you never thought to ask. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be right back.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Well, if you're still listening after my true confessions of eating food out of the trash and losing my mind over corned beef, really, honest to goodness, I just don't even know how to go from there. Just pray for me, really. I just need it some days. I think we all need it. And you know, I shared the story with a few other moms and friends, and it was just so refreshing, and it's such a blessing to have some of them look at me like, yeah, like I've eaten food out of the trash. Like, if my kids throw it away and it's on the top, I eat it. Are you kidding? Like, yeah, but it wasn't like it was a cupcake. It was corned beef. Oh, I make myself laugh. That's all you can do, really. Like, we all have something, and you just have to laugh at yourself and then pray and just ask God to give you the grace. And you know what? That was Thursday, and then Friday we were supposed to have a big snowstorm. So I kept Faithy home, and we just had such a lovely day together. It ended up having 3 inches of snow on the grass, but the roads never had 1 ounce of snow on them. It was crazy. It was so weird, but it was nice to have her here and just to kind of, she loves to play Uno. So we played Uno and we got to cuddle and be together. And so that was mended. And you know, I know that food issue, just to kind of wrap up that conversation, I know that put a lot of wedges and problems between me and my grandfather and my dad for most of my life. I know that's probably a lot of the issues that I have. I have huge body issues about myself. I've always been, quote unquote, chunky, and I've been told that I was chunky. First diet at, eighth grade. I remember buying not Sudafed. What was that stuff called? I don't know. We had to have this diet pill you could buy. It was pretty much like just like caffeine in a pill, like speedy kind of thing. And, you know, getting really, really thin and just the way our culture looks at people, you know, when you're, it's so messed up. It's really messed up. And here I am almost 50 years later, and to see that I still have all of that that was created in my head and in from my childhood still creeping back in. I'm just really grateful that the Lord has pulled back another layer, because if he doesn't expose it, and in this way, in the most embarrassing and humiliating and gratefully not getting sick way, it really has given me an opportunity to address it, to mend it, to put his, to allow and beg his grace upon it so that I can see it for what it is. You know, why did I behave that way? How can I change it? You know, I just wrote a piece for Abbey Press, a care note called Being a Good Enough Parent. And in it, I talk about how apology goes a long way, and we're going to mess up as parents. We're going to make stupid decisions. We all have baggage that's going to rear its ugly head at some point or another. To be able to admit to your child, I am not perfect, and that was stupid. I actually said to Faith, mom was so stupid. And she just looked at me and you know, through her little teary eyes going, yeah, mom, you're being really stupid. You were stupid. And I don't like it when you act like that. And I was able to say, I don't like it when I act like that either. And I'm so sorry. That was so just not okay. And to explain to her the best that I could, because we still have some language barriers between us as she learns English and I learn sign language better and she learns sign language better. But I know at the end she could understand that I was sorry, that I knew I was acting foolishly, that I promised not to do it again, that I need her help not to do it, that it comes from a place that mommy knows is not in her control, but needs to be in her control. You know, that happened to me when I was a kid and it hurt me, and that I need to mend that. So part of being a parent is that you're going to make mistakes. And I think part of being a good parent or a good enough parent is admitting those mistakes, asking your child for forgiveness, and making a decision to do better tomorrow and move forward and not let those bad decisions depress us or stagnate us or keep us oppressed. That's what the devil wants. The devil wants us to feel so horrible about ourselves that we stay oppressed in the moment that we're in. But God's like, he came to give you life and give it to you abundantly. And he wants you to move on from those things. So speaking of moving on from those things, let's talk about this new book that I got in the mail from Sophia Institute Press that I really want to share with you. It's really cute and very informative. It's called A Priest Answers 27 Questions You Never Thought to Ask. It is by Father Michael Kerper. Kerper. Let's go with that one. Kerper. And here's the explanation of it, or the little thing they send you telling you what it is. There's a word here, but I lost an hour of sleep, so not firing all cylinders right now. Do ghosts really exist? Do I have to give money to every beggar who comes along? Is it okay to be cremated? How many times have you asked questions such as these but never took the time to seek the answer? And not just an answer, a Catholic answer. With wit and enthusiasm, Father Michael Kerper, a popular Catholic priest in New England, he's from Nashua, New Hampshire. I actually think I've been to his parish. I think I have been. I did. I used to sing backup in a Christian band. Yes, I did. And I'm pretty sure this is the church we went to sing. So Father Michael, a popular Catholic New England priest in New England, tackles over 24 such questions in this fast-paced and thoroughly enjoyable book. And it was fast-paced. I read half of it. Well, I went all the way through it in about half an hour. I mean, obviously, I need to go more thorough. And you and I are going to read some of it together. Read this book and you'll soon know the answers to the questions such as, what is and isn't heresy? Why doesn't Pope Francis like pets? Whatever happened to limbo? Why can't women become priests? Can Catholics believe in reincarnation? Is it okay to be cremated? Why are the Psalms so violent? Was Christ really born on Christmas Day? And why do priests get moved? Father Kerper tackles each question head on, relying on scripture, tradition, and the catechism and the writing of the saints. Okay, and let me just go back to Father's last name. It's K-E-R-P-E-R. K-E-R-P-E-R. And I'm going to go with Kerper, but I'm probably incorrect. Read this book and you'll soon be armed with little known knowledge that will fascinate and impress all those who have never taken the time to seek the Catholic answer. And again, this is Sophia Institute, and you can find out more on sophiainstitute.com. So let's start with the first question I wanted to tackle. Did Jesus actually give us the Lord's Prayer? Now, growing up, I never knew at all that the Lord's Prayer came from, well, the Lord. I just thought it was one of those things you had to memorize in order to move on from one year of catechism to the next. You know, I just said this in Saturday's retreat, and I felt like I was the only person whose catechism or religious education program did this. We had a list, a checklist. Every year you had to know the sign of the cross, the Our Father, the Hail Mary, the Glory Be, the Act of Contrition, and the Apostles' Creed. The Apostles' Creed they added on, you know, a little later, second, third grade, fourth grade. But like every year they added a new prayer, and you would get called into the hall either by, you know, by your volunteer, or your teacher would have you all coloring and she'd bring you out in the hall one by one, and you would have to recite this prayer, these prayers, and you'd get a check. And I had no idea why I needed to know these prayers except for like they're my test to move on to the next grade in catechism. But that's so not what they're there for. And the Lord's Prayer comes from the Lord. He teaches. He is asked during the Sermon on the Mount by the apostles, how should we pray? And he says, this is how you should pray. And he gives them this prayer. And of course, Father Kapur in here talks about, you must remember that when Jesus preached, he never had stenographers on hand to write down every word precisely. Rather, his disciples listened to him very carefully and soon repeated his words to others. Constant repetition over time produced a collection of very reliable memories of his shorter sayings and longer statements, such as the Our Father, which is the only prayer he left to us intact. Eventually, the gospel writers transformed these oral traditions into text, which are very reliable, although certainly not as precise as a court reporter's transcript today. But, you know, divinely inspired. And if you've ever listened to a speaker, you know, I've heard Matthew Kelly, for instance, speak a few times. And there's a few things that he says repeatedly, you know, the best version of yourself. And some other things that he says, Scott Hahn says things. And if you have a favorite actor or a singer-songwriter, you know, people have their catchphrases or the things that they teach about, like, over and over again. And you can repeat them yourself. You start to, find the part of your own conversation or the own way that you speak. And you can give credit to the person who first taught you it. And I think that's, you know, a little way of seeing how this happened. You know, Jesus, I'm sure, wasn't asked that question just once. He preached for 3 years, and I'm sure he gave them the outline to this prayer, which was how he prayed again and again, you know, to say Our Father and to teach them to give them that idea that God was our Father and he was in heaven and his will was to be done there and here. And he gives us all that we need, and we're to avoid trespasses, and you need to forgive. But first, God will forgive us. But first, we need to forgive others. It's like all of what Jesus came to teach us is wrapped up in this prayer, and all that God asked for us is wrapped up in this prayer. So you can see over time, as Jesus taught, as he shared this prayer, as he, you know, modeled his own prayer life, that this would have come together and it would have been a reliable source. So yes, we do get the Lord's Prayer from the Lord. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media, and we'll be back with some 20 questions you never thought to ask after these messages.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Well, Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I'm sharing with you a new book that has arrived in my home called A Priest Answers 27 Questions You Never Thought to Ask Father Michael Kapur, and this is from Sophia Institute Press. And the next question I wanted to look at was holding hands and kissing. Why does everyone do something different at Mass? So each chapter, Father is asking responding to a letter or a question he's received. And here's the question. Dear Father, I attend Mass at several parishes in New Hampshire, and I am becoming confused in some parishes. People hold hands during the Our Father, and others, I see people raising their hands like the priest at the altar. Also, I find the sign of peace a huge distraction. Isn't it a throwback to 1960s? More and more, I find it difficult to pray because everyone's doing something different in a different way. Everyone doing things in a different way. So he said, your multiple questions touch upon three interconnected issues: the importance of physical gestures in public worship, the tension between tradition and innovation, and the need to balance communal and individual preferences. So these three things really touched my heart, and I couldn't wait to see what he had to say. Personally, this is my little personal two cents before we start. I do not like to hold hands during the Our Father. I'm a germaphobe. just make that perfectly clear. That's the same reason I'm not a big fan of the sign of peace, the handshaking. I'd rather have the hug of peace, quite honestly. The kiss of peace is not going to happen. Too many germs. But the hug of peace would be good. I would be fine with the hug. Like, just don't touch my hands. And now with my eczema on my hands so severe that I really can't. You don't want to touch my hands. Never mind me wanting you to touch them. Just not going to happen. So the sign of peace has become quite a detriment to me at Mass. I'm signing for faith and I'm standing, so it's easy for me to avoid the sign of peace. I hug my family, and then there's this beautiful woman that I love that's in a wheelchair behind me, so I'll go over and wish her a sign of peace, peace be with her. But usually I'm pretty good. So let's see what Father has to say. First, he says, let's consider the role of the body in worship, something we often overlook. Human beings are a union of matter and spirit, body and soul. As such, during public worship, our bodies inevitably become involved in what is primarily a spiritual activity. Designated bodily postures correspond with specific spiritual activities. For example, we listen to God's word, we stand together when we profess the creed, and we kneel during the times of intense awareness of Jesus's presence, notably during the Eucharistic prayer and before and after receiving communion. I love that about our Catholic faith, that it's like Catholic calisthenics. And as a woman with ADD, being able to stand, sit, move during Mass is a really good thing. I think sometimes that's why the Lord sent me Faithy, and I have to interpret because I'm more aware of what's happening because I have to be physically present, standing, paying attention, moving. Kind of funny. In addition, Father continues, to these common postures, the liturgy also has two kinds of gestures. These are ordained leaders and those for the people. Gestures used only for the ordained include the outstretched hands, which he leads prayer and offers the greetings, the movements during the Eucharistic prayer, and the acts of blessing. The principal gestures of the people are the sign of peace, folded hands during prayer, and genuflection to honor and acknowledge the Eucharistic presence. These postures and gestures have deep meanings and should never become mere habits. Rather, they should always reflect what's happening to us spiritually. Again, what I love about the Catholic Church and the faith and the Mass and the liturgies, Mass and liturgy is the same word, but same thing. Is that it's a full body experience. There's meaning to everything we say and we do. They all lead us to deeper prayer. They all lead us to deeper union with Christ. But I grew up not knowing any of that. And I was typically bored in Mass. It was the person who grabbed the bulletin on her way into church, would read the bulletin during the the mass readings. I would make a list of my to-do list during the homilies. I'd kind of fall asleep sometimes during the Eucharistic prayer because my head was down. And then I'd leave going, I didn't get anything out of that. Gee, I wonder why, Allison. I wonder why you just spent 45 minutes or an hour in there and didn't get anything. Because you weren't engaged. You weren't listening. You weren't paying attention. Everything was perfunctory. You weren't giving your heart to what was happening there. And what's happening is that heaven and earth collide in the moment of the Eucharistic prayer, when the consecration, when we believe with our whole hearts that bread and that wine become the body and blood of our Lord Jesus Christ. And wherever Christ is, heaven is. So all the saints and the angels, our Blessed Mother, all of those who have gone before us, who have been marked with the sign of heaven, they're all there, whether they've been named or unnamed. If you're in heaven, you're a saint and you're there. It's such an amazing experience. So the angels, I think about when we sing, holy, 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 we are literally, joining into the choirs of angels. Like, that's incredible. And I can picture them sometimes just there singing around the altar, and we're allowed to join in with them. That's amazing. Just amazing. If you haven't yet read anything on the Mass, there's some really great books out there. We did the seven something of the Mass. Oh, I'll link to it. It was Dr. Tom Curran's book. It was fantastic on the Mass. Seven Moments or something that will change your life forever. I'm terrible at titles of stuff. It's because I know too many in my head. Maybe I'll make a note here. Maybe it's one of the books that we should look at. Some of them on the Mass that really kind of opens up our hearts to what is happening there. I know the Seven Secrets of the Eucharist from Vinnie Flynn, that completely changed the way I lived. I experienced Mass. Just being more reverent, more aware of what was happening, the gift that the Eucharist is. So let's look a little bit now back to this question here. And the book is A Priest Answers Seven Questions You Never Thought to Ask, Sophia Institute Press. Although no one can pinpoint the exact origin of the kiss of peace, it surely existed in the early 5th century. It's not from the 70s, it actually 60s. It goes way back. More than that, whether one likes it or not, it is definitely not an innovation, but part of our genuine liturgical tradition. Moreover, recognizing that it may not work well in all conditions and cultures, the church never mandated it, but made it optional. And there's times like during flu epidemics that our church asks us not to do it. I've been present for that, and it's my favorite time. Not that we're having a flu epidemic, it's just that the stress is off me just for a little bit, not to have to do the sign of peace. Yes, I am that freaked out by it. I am. I know it's pathetic. I admit it. It's a pathetic thing to be upset about, but it's beautiful. I mean, I understand. It's like the scriptures say, if you have anything against your brothers or sisters before you approach the altar, you must ask for their forgiveness. And that's part of what's happening there, is you're offering a sign of peace and making peace with those around you so that you are free to come to the altar and receive what God has for you. That's beautiful. I get it. I totally get it. I just don't like it because I don't particularly like shaking hands with people. I need to get over my germ. My germ thing will be, let's get over the food issues first, and then we'll move on to the germ thing. I've come to the conclusion that I must have missed something really important because I was sick at some point in my life, because I become very obsessed with not being sick, especially with something important coming up in my life. And then there's the whole holding hands or raising of hands during the Our Father. The holding of hands, Father Kerper talks in here about Kerper. It's distracting. The main thing he says is that you don't want to distract from God and the purpose of your being there to worship. And, you know, when people are holding hands, there's parts of the church that you can't reach to. So then there becomes a disconnect. Not everybody likes to hold hands. I know I've been in a church where the entire church connects and they even come across the aisles to connect to each other. And you go from this deep moment of prayer and reverence, and all of a sudden there's like this scuffling and this movement, and you're like, what is going on? This is crazy. And I'm just not a hold, again, germs, not a handhold person. And then I used to raise my hands. It's called the Orange position. That's when you put your hands upright, just like the priest. And then I read that that's the priest's stance, not the people's stance. And even the deacon who stands next to him is not supposed to do it. And they think that that's a lot of where the confusion came, because the deacon started to do it. The people in the congregation followed suit. But to have your hands folded together, your head down, if because you're in prayer, and just give that prayer to God, you and Him. You're in communion. I get it. But it's such a beautiful moment not to be distracted by all this stuff going on. So I understand this person's question. But in the end, Father does make the very important golden rule that flows from the demands of charity. During public worship, never do anything that draws attention to yourself or distracts other people. For sure, he concludes, we all have our own likes and dislikes about the liturgy, but unity in glorifying God should always take precedence over one's own spiritual style and preference. We need to put Christ always at the center of our Mass, because that's why we are there. There it is. I'm like, I have to be close to the end of that 30 seconds. There it goes. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Please stay tuned. We have more to come.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We're talking today about a new book that came in my mail. Sophia Institute Press put it out. It's called A Priest Answers 27 Questions You Never Thought to Ask. And I know I've not gotten through many of them, so Wednesday we'll pick it back up. That's the beauty of having your own show and making all your own decisions. You can decide whatever you want. On Friday, I'm going to be visited by Amy Brooks. She is the blogger over on Prayer, Wine, Chocolate, right? Is that not the best name of a blog ever? Prayer, Wine, Chocolate. And I'm really looking forward to speaking with Amy. She's an adoptive mom like myself. She's just her blog is filled with beautiful insights on the faith, on motherhood, on adoption. I know that she is presently seeking another child to adopt, and she's got an amazing adoption story that she will share from her first child. And I know that you will enjoy your time with Amy as much as I will. Really enjoying this 2017 kind of switch in our schedule, speaking with all these wonderful bloggers. I do have some authors coming on. Lisa Mladenik will be making another trip. Danielle Bean will be here on Monday. And Pat Gohn will be back in April. She's got a new book coming out. So we do have some of our favorite authors coming back and sharing. They've got some new books coming out. I know Maria Johnson, My Badass Book of Saints. Love that name of that book. She also has a new book coming out, and I will be dragging her back on here because there's no one more fun, really, than Maria Johnson. So I hope you're enjoying 2017. And if there's a book you've discovered and you'd love for us to talk about it here, just send me a message, aseekingheart@breadboxmedia.com. If you have any prayer requests, you can send them there as well, aseekingheart@breadboxmedia.com, or go over to Reconciled to You. That's my website. Reconciled to You. I blog there just about every day, and I've been really blessed to be just a blogging maniac for Lent. I have been on CatholicStand.com. I've been on Women in the New Evangelization. You can go to CatholicVineyard.com. And all of these you can get also from my website, Reconciled to You, because I do Flashback Friday, where I'll list all the different places that I have been blogging. Been so blessed, CatholicMom.com. Where else have I? The New Evangelizers. I think that one comes out this week. Catholic Stand, as I mentioned. There's Diocesan Publications. They are doing a Lenten reflection each day over on their website, diocesanpublications.com. You can sign up for it to come right to your inbox. I like that. I really do. Like, I have the USCCB's daily readings that come directly to my email. I have the Pray More Novenas that come right to my email, the Catholic Mom daily gospel reflection. I don't always get to read all of them, but I like the options, and I like the opportunities, and I'd like to remember that this great stuff is out there. So they invited me to share a couple of reflections, there's the word, for Lent, so Diocesan Publications, and Pauline Laity, I wrote on forgiveness. Yes, I have been just incredibly blessed that all of these great sites are interested in and what the Lord says through me. So I've been a writing maniac. It's all over the internet. If you want to read any of them, I've written about trusting God, about my adoption story and her Faithy's rejection and how the Lord taught me how to trust him by learning to gain her trust. Forgiveness, like I said, on PaulineLaity.com. The 5 types of prayer, I wrote about that on Catholic Stand. So lots of good stuff that the Lord has just inspired me to share with you. I can say it's good stuff because really, I just pray. And you know, Jesus didn't have a stenographer, but I feel like he does now. I feel like most days I'm just a stenographer. Like, just, Lord, just fill my heart with what you want people to know, and I will write it down for you. And then I send it off to really good people who edit it for me. Still doing the walk in her sandals, the Wine Lenten book club. That's over on Facebook and also on Wine website, which is catholicvineyard.com. On Sunday, I wrote about my foot washing experience, the time that I went so prideful and the time the Lord completely humbled me. Again, if you want any of those links, I hope to remember to put them with the show notes. But if I don't and you want to know something specific, seekingheart@breadboxmedia.com, or just go to reconciledtoyou.com. You can reach me there or find the links to all of that there. And we'll pick up again with The Priest Answers 27 Questions You Never Thought to Ask, Father Michael Kapur, on Wednesday. By then, maybe I'll find out from Sophia Institute Press how I actually say his name. Yeah. I really do. I hope I get points for trying. You can go to sophiainstitute.com for more information. As my voice fails me now, let's go back. I thought this was a good one to talk about. It's how should we fast? Dear Father Kapur, I struggle during the Lenten season, especially with the whole idea of fasting, which doesn't seem to mean much anymore. Local seafood restaurants fill up on Friday evenings, with Catholics fulfilling their non-meat on Friday sacrifice, quote-unquote sacrifice, lobster and chowder. That's how we say it here, by the way, chowder. Just doesn't seem too much of a sacrifice to me. Aren't those people hypocrites? Your question about Lenten fast and lobster-eating Catholics opens the door to a much weightier question. Father continues, how can an individual Catholic move from legalism to a life of true Christian penance? Isn't that beautiful? How can we do that? My husband, the other day, he's in the diaconate program, and he said that he's always asked that question, why do we fast, especially at work? And he said, I never really had a good answer to it. So he decided to research it and pray about it. And one of the things that he came up with, and this is just beautiful, is Jesus sacrificed his flesh for us. Should we not be able to sacrifice for just one day eating flesh for him? What? Amazing, right? I love that. I don't know where he found that, but that's incredible. So Father goes on, though, talking about the legalism, the tendency to believe that one achieves salvation primarily by observing laws. For sure, obeying just and reasonable laws, such as church rules about fasting and abstinence, that's a good thing. Some people, however, want to stop there, observing the minimal requirements just to avoid punishment. Obedience, of course, Father continues, is not the problem. The real danger is a minimalistic attitude that keeps a person from moving beyond mere external practice to a real change of heart. And it made me think of the whole lukewarmness that John talks about in Revelation, where the lukewarm are spewed from the mouth of God. So having this lukewarm attitude of just, yeah, I'll just do what I need to, or I'll, you know, perhaps, you know, my mother always did this, or it's tradition, and you don't really have a heart for why you're doing it, and you don't think about why this might be important or how you can use it to grow closer to God, which of course is the whole purpose of fast. This is where we have to really consider our motives for what we do and why we do things. And it has to be, as he said, a transformation. We're called to constant conversion. We have to constantly be drawing closer to God and becoming the person God created us to become those saints that we were born to be. After all, Father continues, Jesus came to give us abundant life, not an eternal parole from hell. Very, very astute and to the point. The free act of reducing or totally eliminating the consumption of food also fosters true humility by making us vividly aware of our total dependence on God. Some of the best talks that I have ever been blessed to give have come while I was fasting. And at the end of the day of fast, when you would think, I don't have energy left, I could be dizzy, I don't know how I'm going to string two thoughts together. But then in that moment, when I pray, Lord, let your work and will be done and let me get out of your way, it truly is his strength that becomes enough. It really is his grace that is sufficient, as St. Paul tells us, and he takes over. So, you know, I won't think I want to be driving sometimes in that Lenten condition of fasting, or that fasting condition, but I certainly see where giving up the food, and for me, my life has become a fast of giving up some of my favorite foods, sweetbreads and eggs and peanut butter. But to instead of going, oh, this stinks that I can't have this, or, you know, well, I know that not eating is going to, you know, keep me out of hell, to say, Lord, I offer this sacrifice to you. Help me to use it to grow closer to you. Let me see the little glimpse through this small sacrifice, how beautiful and big the sacrifice you did for me to, you know, split that veil between heaven and earth, to open up eternal life for me with God. Like, this is what's important. You know, sometimes we can get very stuck on the here, the now, the earthly, when we know that this is but a breath, and everything we do and think and say should be leading us to eternal, the eternal weight of glory, the eternal that's beyond this. And sometimes we can, like Father said, get really legalistic and, you know, can't eat meat, can't fast, can't, you know, all this stuff. Like, just give it to God and say, Lord, guide me on how you want me to answer these beautiful laws and calls of our church, the traditions of the Catholic Church. On Wednesday, when we're back live, we'll pick back up with The Priest Answers 27 Questions You Never Thought to Ask. You are listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Redbox Media.
Thank you for listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.